It's here and now. Two men, one tall, one very, very short, walk through a long-ago Scotland looking for a cave. And on the way, they meet a fortune teller who tells them, there was a woman in a tree, there will be a man in a tree. And as the journey ends, so will there be. And never has such an innocent prophecy been so grimly realized. It's the story told in Neil Gaiman's dark and compelling graphic novella, The Truth is a Cave in the Black Mountains. And this Friday, he'll tell it again at New York's Carnegie Hall, accompanied by the four-play string quartet with illustrations from the book by artist Eddie Campbell projected behind him. Here's a little of a previous performance at the Sydney Opera House. Neil Gaiman reading the opening, the words of the shorter man, foreshadowing key elements of the story we're about to hear. A missing daughter, a man left behind.
You ask me if I can forgive myself. I can forgive myself for many things. For where I left him, for what I did. But I will not forgive myself for the year that I hated my daughter, when I believed her to have run away, perhaps to the city. During that year I forbade her name to be mentioned. And if her name entered my prayers when I prayed, it was to ask that she would one day learn the meaning of what she had done, of the dishonor that she had brought to our family, of the red that ringed her mother's eyes. I hate myself for that.
Neil Gaiman joins us from the studios of Northeast Public Radio. And Neil, so many riddles, but hearing that beginning again, I just got it. We're not going to give it away, but I know what happened to his daughter.
You do.
Where did you come up with this story?
There was a story by a lady named Otta F. Swire, a book on the myths of the Hebrides. And she talked about the Black Mountains on the Isle of Skye, the Coolin Mountains, and how there was a cave in these mountains that contained gold. And if you went there, there were no monsters to guard the cave. There was nothing to stop you. You could always go in and you could take gold from the cave. But that it would take a little bit of your soul. Hmm. It would make you evil. And I started thinking about that because that wasn't like any legend that I'd ever heard. There's no legend where they just say, well, yes, you can do this, but you'll not be the same person afterwards.
Yeah. Which is true of your two characters. Who are your two characters?
Callum McInnes, who is a reaver. He's a tall, dangerous warrior of a man. Then there is a dwarf who is telling us the story. You're back in Jacobite times, and there's a king across the water, and there's political things happening, and maybe gold needs to be gotten. But there's also a very personal story being played out. Yeah. For our narrator and for the reaver.
The tall reaver. Let's listen to a few sections of the multimedia performance that you're going to be performing again at Carnegie Hall. Here the day begins. Let's listen.
For breakfast, I made porridge and threw in some dried plums to soften them. The mountains were black and grey against the white of the sky. We saw eagles, huge and ragged of wing, circling above us. Callum set a sober pace, and I walked beside him, taking two steps for every one of his.
Neil Gaiman, you've certainly done a lot of readings, but what's it like to have this accompaniment?
It's amazing. When the Sydney Opera House got in touch with me and said, would you read a story? They suggested the four-play string quartet. I listened to some of their stuff. They are imaginative. You heard in that little extract that they were creating the noise of hawks. Hmm. It's like a strange sort of beautiful soundtrack. Sometimes it's musical, and sometimes it's just amazing noise.
The rocks were black and slippery. We walked and climbed and clambered and clung. We slipped and slid and stumbled and staggered. Yet even in the mist, Callum knew where he was going, and I followed him.
One thing that I found was that I started relating on the stage to the words in a different way. As they would start creating musical rhythms, I would find myself going into the text and just echoing the rhythms that they were doing, finding a different beat, hitting different words in different ways. Mm. And actually, from my perspective, almost exploring the music of the words in a way that I would never do if I were unaccompanied and just up on a stage.
So it gives it a whole new understanding. And you talk about sound. Let's listen to another portion when the two men again walking up this mountain heading towards this cave and Callum McInnes falls.
He tested the rope, pulled on it, motioned me to follow him when the stone gave way beneath his foot and he slipped on the wet rock and fell into the abyss. The rope held, and the rock beside me held. Callum McInnes dangled from the end of the rope.
Neil Gaiman, it's true of a lot of graphic novels. It's small. This is a thin book. But what is it about? This is Moby Dick, you know, at some points. What is it about this genre that makes it so rich?
I think it's because we get to experience the same thing in very different ways with different parts of ourselves. Human beings do not relate to written words in the same way that they relate to spoken words. They do not relate to music in the same way that they do to pictures. It's all different parts of our head, different parts of our minds processing this. And then when you put them all together, suddenly it's as if you're being given permission to make a movie in your head. And it sweeps you up in it. It gets the heart pounding in a way that I don't think sitting and reading a story on its own would actually do, although that is a wonderful, pure, and perfect experience of itself.
You're well known for loving being in this place of bleakness and heart pounding, and the ending to this book, the cave book, is chilling. You told the New York Times that fiction allows us to take our little bits of poison and safely ingest them so when the real thing happens, we're prepared. That's a grim expectation, you know, that you're going to be poisoned.
I think it's a true one. I mean, the analogy, I was talking to the New York Times about the poisoners in the 17th and 18th century who would ingest tiny little bits of their own poisons, so that then if they were with somebody and they poisoned their dinner and the person said, well, I hope you will have some of this wine with me, they could go, of course I will, and swig it back with essentially no ill effects. And I was saying, one of the great things about fiction is we as a race only get to look out of our own eyes at the world. And fiction is a fantastic way of looking out through somebody else's eyes. You get to experience loss and tragedy and death, but experience these things in a form which means that when you close the pages and put the book back on the shelf, it's over and you're home and you're safe. It takes us to places that we would never otherwise go and puts us behind eyes that are not our own.
Neil Gaiman's new book is The Truth is a Cave in the Black Mountains. He'll be reading from it at a multimedia performance at New York's Carnegie Hall. Neil Gaiman, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. That was really enjoyable, Robin.
And by the way, you can see some of Eddie Campbell's illustrations in The Truth is a Cave in the Black Mountains at hearnow.org. And Jeremy, Neil Gaiman's next book, he's going to take on Hansel and Gretel and tell that story.
Wow.
Again. I cannot wait. Here and Now is a production of NPR and WBR Boston in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from the Institute of Contemporary Art with Jim Hodges. The show features mirror mosaics, walls of flowers, and denim tapestry. Now on view, ICABoston.org.